97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, college coaching salaries. Joining us are Greg Doyle, national columnist for CBSSports.com and author of the book Coach K, Building the Dynasty. And Ricky Left, sports attorney and agent, as well as a professor of sports law at the University of South Carolina. Gentlemen, I have in front of me a list of the highest paid coaches in college football and men's basketball. Mike Krzyzewski at Duke will pull in a cool $7.2 million this year. In football, Nick Saban at Alabama tops the list at $5.65 million. Greg, let's start with you. Do those two guys deserve that kind of money?
Oh, I don't know. You're asking me that question like we're in a vacuum. We're not. The open marketplace, I guess, says they're worth it. But the open marketplace says the players on their roster are worth some money, too. And there's no money to go for those players. And if the way those players can get paid, too, is by taking a little bit away from Coach K and Saban, then I'm all for that.
Ricky? Do they deserve that kind of money?
I think you're charged with getting them
that kind of money.
Pardon me now? I'm sorry. I think that if you look at Coach K and you look at Coach Saban and you look at the contributions that they make to the institution overall, you know, Coach K has become somewhat of an institution at Duke. And so, you know, his value even far exceeds just basketball alone in terms of him being a face of the institution, you know, the integrity that he brings along with the exposure for the institution. And you know, there's, you know, documented research that indicates that contributions go up, people's interest in the institution, including students. When you have good athletic programs, you get a wider pool of qualified students who are interested in the institution. And I would say, particularly given the fact that either one of them could have gone probably to the NBA or the NFL to coach.
Ricky, when you're negotiating, I would assume that at least some of the time you're negotiating with a college president to get a good salary for a big-name coach. The college president typically would come from an academic setting, not a business setting. Is that a fair fight?
Well, I wouldn't say it's an unfair fight. I mean, you know, college presidents are pretty sophisticated folks. I mean, typically it's not done in a vacuum. I mean, if a college president is actually involved in a negotiation, they're going to have two other people that are going to be involved. One, they're going to have the general counsel, the institution, or outside counsel, and they'll also have an athletics director. And so it's not a function of fair fight. It's a function of leverage. I mean, what's the value proposition for the coach or the individual that you're negotiating on behalf of, and what's the impact potentially to the institution and to that particular program? You know, should they be able to hire that person, or should they want to retain that person's services?
And Greg, quite often the head coach of football or men's basketball makes quite a bit more money than the president of the university does. But how many more people know that coach are tied to the university because of the coach, who might not even know, or the program might not even know the name of the president of the university?
Yeah, I've got no problem with the coaches making more than the president of the university. I'm reminded of something Babe Ruth was said, I don't know what year it was, you know, I wasn't there to hear it, but I've read it, you know, in 1927 or something, he was making $80,000 or whatever he was making, and someone said, that's more than the president made. And Babe Ruth said, yeah, well, I had a better year than the president. and really, it comes down to, you know, the president raises some money, and presidents are a lot more interchangeable than a great coach. Look, and I already said that I think Saban makes too much, and I think he does. If by making that much money, that means the players don't get a slice of it. That's ridiculous to me. But coaches generate millions, and presidents do too. They raise money, but they can be. You can swap out a president and still raise a lot of money. You swap out a coach and start losing, you're in big trouble.
And it's very common that the highest paid state employee, well, in 40 of the 50 states, is either a football or a basketball coach. Does that seem strange at all to either of you?
No, only because, I mean, when you look at, you know, you look at various states, I mean, coaches at the BCS level or the upper, you know, what we used to call upper level, upper major Division One basketball level, they all make over $1 million for the most part. And so, I mean, very few state employees are even going to begin to approach that. And no, I don't think it's strange. It's the nature of the beast. It's the industry that they're participating in, and there's a value added, you know, to kind of piggyback on something that was said earlier, which is, you know, they're responsible for generating, in many cases, you know, revenue. I mean, you can see a correlation, you know, in successful programs, revenue generation, and the quality of the coach that's been hired to lead a program.
And Greg, college presidents, they a lot of their job is glad handing, is you know, being buddy buddy with big time donors, and many of those big time donors want to see the university have a very strong athletics program. So paying these big salaries to big name coaches, isn't that just part of doing business?
Well, it is now. Again, the question is, we're not dealing in a vacuum. We're dealing with, well, here's where we are right now, and right now, you know, the market says, because people have said it's okay to say that, that Saban's worth 5 or 6 and Coach K gets 7, and, you know, even an average to mediocre coach at, pick a school, your school here, makes $3 million. And that's just what, you know, there's no going back is the problem. The problem is the presidents and the ADs and everybody who was in charge of controlling salaries years ago lost all control. And the arms race, they got the better of them. And now their legacy is one of accomplishing nothing academically. Nobody knows, but we do know that they're the reason these guys make $9 million next year. There's no going back. That's the problem. There's no going back. No one's ever going to take a pay cut. No one's ever going to say, Nick Saban will never say, Coach K will never say, I make $7 million, and if I keep getting raises, I'm going to be making 10 one day, and that's just stupid. And so I'm going to go back to 2 because that's just more in line with what, you know, decent society ought to say, ought to make, I guess. But at the same time, we've never, and I'm going to have it both ways, but, you know, life is not a morality play. School teachers, people that work at hospice centers, people that do, you know, stuff that matters a whole lot more than winning 30 games in a Division One basketball season. Those people make $40 grand, you know, and that's just what they make, and that's the way it is. We're not, you know, you can snap your fingers and say it shouldn't be that way, but it's not going to work.
It has been said that those who entertain us are paid much more than those who sustain us. So that's where we are with that part of the argument. Gentlemen, we will return to our discussion of coaches' salaries in major college football and basketball on Sports Focus in just a moment.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're discussing coaches' salaries in football and major college basketball with Ricky Left. And Ricky, you are a sports agent. Of course, you're charged with getting big salaries for your clients. That's just part of the job. Greg has compared what coaches are getting to what athletes get. Is that part of the argument?
So you mean in terms of what the student-athlete gets?
That the student-athlete should get something out of this, more than just the scholarship.
You know, I can tell you that, and I certainly, you know, share Greg's concern that, you know, a student-athlete who has market value, like a Johnny Manziel, who through, you know, third parties could generate, you know, because he's the Heisman Trophy winner, he's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner for a year, that the rules in the NCAA should not prohibit him from being able to capitalize on his name, his likeness, his image. I don't have any disagreement with him with regards to the fact that potentially student athletes at the highest levels who play a significant role in helping to generate that revenue there ought to be some sort of compensation or pay for them as well. Now, whether or not that necessarily comes from the pot of funds or gold that's being used to pay coaches, I'm not sure whether I necessarily completely agree with that. Salaries are proliferated, and they've, you know, significantly. And like Greg, I mean, I've seen them grow, exponentially over time. When I initially started representing coaches 20-some-odd years ago, the way that contracts were structured was the university paid the coach, in many cases, a base salary. There may be a camp guarantee of some kind and some sort of supplemental compensation. And then TV and radio and other benefits, perquisites, that they could go out and generate on their own. It was the other way that they would be compensated, through contracts with third parties. Well, after the Knight Commission recommended that the university should leverage their own marketing inventory, then all that money came back to the institution. And so now the salaries appear to be much higher than they once were. But when coaches controlled their own compensation through TV and radio and other perquisites, oftentimes we didn't know exactly what they were making. And so, I mean, that would be a point that I think, you know, is relevant here in terms of as we talk about the increase. Now, are they higher now than they were before? Yes, absolutely. But are they that much higher? In some instances, they may not be.
Greg, you wrote not too long ago about the increase in coaches' salaries compared to the days when the coach made $17,000 and the athletes got a scholarship, and now the coach makes $5.65 million and the athletes get a scholarship.
Yeah, back in the 70s, I lived in Norman, Oklahoma, in 1976, and Oklahoma OU, the Sooners football team, had won the national title in 74 and 75. And in 73, may have been undefeated as well. I forget. But they had a three-year stretch where they were Alabama back then. Okay, and Barry Switzer was Nick Saban. And Barry Switzer was my next-door neighbor. And my dad was a low-level, just started out, young, low-level associate attorney, you know, gopher. And my mom was a secretary. And we had Barry Switzer as our next-door neighbor. You know, nowadays, Bob Stoops, coaching OU, I'm guessing he lives on a golf course, might even own the damn thing. So, you know, salaries have gone up exponentially, and good for them, okay? Good for them. But because the money generated by players and coaches, the money generated has gone up exponentially. Well, everybody's got their hand in that pie getting more than ever, including sports writers like me. The one person in this whole equation who's not gotten any more money than he did back in 1975 is the athlete that everybody's turning on the TV to watch, and I can't make sense of that.
There has been on many college campuses a comparison of coaches' salaries to what athletes make, and also what coaches make to what academics make. In the WAC, it's something like 3 times more. In the SEC, it's something like 8.3 times more. Some people don't like that very much. Can you respond to that, Ricky?
Well, you know, I work in academia. And we have some very talented folks who work in my department, some of whom are the most prolific researchers, you know, in the industry. And but the argument that I think that can be made is, you know, they bring significant value to the institution. But the flip side of it is that in terms of what the expectations are, you know, for a coach, you know, the amount of pressure that a coach has to win and be successful. You know, the sheer magnitude of the size of the budgets that they manage, the expectation of, you know, the generation of revenue, both not only from ticket sales and corporate sponsorships, but the ability to be able to glad hand and, you know, and interface with, you know, wealthy folks who support the institution and be able to help raise money, both for the academic and athletic departments. My colleagues don't have that pressure. Those expectations.
In addition to the pressure, Ricky, listen, you're right, I agree with you. In addition to all that, is that the money that's floating through college sports right now is floating through there for a couple of reasons, but the two biggest ones, I think, are the TV money and the money people spend on tickets at games. And nobody's turning on a TV to watch a chemistry professor, I don't care how good you are, and
right.
Nobody's spending $100 for a front row seat to go to a lecture, you know, to listen to the guy in humanities. So Charlie, while I understand the academic side is a little bit out of shape by that, I also understand eggheads know your place. You know, you guys make a nice living, and that's great. But come on, no one's spending a lot of money to watch you guys do your business. And I'd like to teach journalism someday myself in college, but when I do that, I will never ever ever say, "How dare Nick Saban make 30 times what I make?" Because that's a stupid argument.
Is a major college coach more like the CEO of a big company, or more like the manager of a top entertainer, or is there some other comparison?
No, I think I've been making this argument for close to 20 years, that a coach at a major college, and I represented Tubby Smith at Kentucky, and, you know, Kentucky, you know, like Alabama in football, I mean, the expectations and the demands and the time of a coach, and that's true of at any major institution, but particularly at these really high-profile institutions, are substantial. And they're CEOs because they have to be able to manage the entire program. They have to be able to oversee not only the student-athletes and the coaches who work for them, but there are various other components of the institution that they're involved in. And there's expectations. You know, when something, if there's a disaster that occurs in Alabama, one of the first people who gets a phone call to go visit is Nick Saban. You know, when Coach Smith was at Kentucky, it was the same thing. And so, you know, there are more demands on their time than what people know and see beyond football or beyond basketball. The expectation that they're going to be leaders in their communities, the expectations that they're going to be leaders, you know, in the industry. So it's a lot more than what, and so it's not just like managing talent. That's you know, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our guests are Greg Doyle and Ricky Left, and we're discussing college coaching salaries. Greg, before the break, we asked what's a good comparison for a coach? Is it a CEO, or is it an entertainment manager, or is it something else?
Well, you got to define which coach you're talking about. Mack Brown and Nick Saban are definitely CEOs. The head football coach at Louisiana Monroe is the entertainment manager. I mean, he's a smaller CEO. It's kind of both. I mean, the sad, I don't know if it's not sad, but the truth of the matter is that on a day-to-day basis, they are a CEO. There's no way around that. But if they get fired in 3 years, or if they get a raise in 3 years, it's not because they were a great CEO. It's because they were a great talent manager. So I hate to say, the answer is both, but the answer is undeniably both. I mean, they are running a multi-million dollar company. They are. But they also are judged wins and losses, which is a talent manager.
All of that taken together, Ricky, how does that the multiple demands that you mentioned on a coach's time, how does all that get factored in to how a coach is compensated?
Well, you know, Greg said, I mean, it depends on where you are. I mean, if it's Louisiana Lafayette, that stage is nowhere near as profound or demanding as, you know, as a stage that Coach Saban or Coach Mack Brown have, you know, at Texas and at Alabama. And so, you know, you have to look at, you know, what the expectations are. You know, the expectation at a Texas or an expectation at Alabama or at a Kentucky or, you know, in Indiana or, you know, Kansas or North Carolina, you know, in basketball is that they want to win championships. And that's the expectation. And so consequently, when you have those types of expectations, when someone performs or when you go out to find a coach who you believe has the ability to perform at that level and to win championships, then, you know, it's going to be market-driven in large part because the competitive marketplace, part of what's driven up these salaries is that there's a migration now back and forth between college football and professional football and college basketball and professional basketball. And so the market is much greater than it was 20 years ago. It really is. And so the competition for talent is greater. And so that helps to drive. That's what drives those numbers.
And Greg, job security often comes into this conversation that coaches don't have much job security. They move around a lot. But if they do get let go, there's typically a big buyout. So should that be part of the argument?
Do they deserve a lot of money because their job security is so small?
Yeah.
Nah, not at all. Because you can always get another job. Look, I get laid off tomorrow by my job. I'm pretty sure I write well enough. Someone else will hire me. If you're a great football coach or even a good football coach, you get laid off tomorrow. No, you're not going to get hired again by someone paying you $5 million. But you'll get hired making a really good livable wage, and by that I mean $800,000 or minimum. So the idea that, they can be fired at any moment, they're not going to be homeless. They're not going to be going to a soup kitchen the day they get fired. So let's be realistic about this.
Ricky, respond to that, if you will.
Well, I mean, that's another show altogether. I would just respectfully disagree with him in that regard. I mean, the bottom line is that what we're talking about are liquidated damages. And what it is that you've terminated the contractors for X number of years. you terminate the contract prior to its expiration. Consequently, we have a breach. And so what we've done through liquidated damages is negotiated for the coach and for the institution, because there's a buyout typically the other way, what those damages will be, as opposed to spending, you know, significant amounts of money and time on litigation that may have been
out there. I'm not against buyouts. I'm just saying, if we're going to use their job security as a reason to say these guys deserve $8 million a year, I'm not going to say that. But they absolutely deserve a buyout, no question about it.
And we'll have to leave the discussion right there. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Ricky Left and Greg Doyle, our guests. Thank you to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.